啊，或者在闽西啊，会不会？This is Peter Morris of the Centre for History of Chemistry, Philadelphia, interviewing Dr. Paul S. Greer.
There's no doctor connected with it.
Oh, sorry. Paul S. Greer at his home in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, on November 13, 1985. Mr. Greer, you were born on November 28, 1904, at Braddock, Pennsylvania, which I gather is near Pittsburgh.
10 miles out.
10 miles out of Pittsburgh. What was your parents' background?
My father was the founder, owner, and manager of a business school, which he started in 1899 and carried on until his retirement in 1940.
And did your mother ever work?
My mother was born in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Graduated from what is now graduated from Pittsburgh Female College, which is now known as Chatham College.
Mm-hmm.
And married my father in 1893 in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Where my father had been a teacher in the Morrell Institute there.
Mm-hmm. Where was your father born, by the way? But you mentioned where your mother was born.
My father was born in Mechanicsburg, Indiana County, Pennsylvania. Had graduated from Iron City Business College in Pittsburgh, where he had taught 3 years. And went to Johnstown, and with M.E. Bennett helped organize a business school known as the Morrell Institute. He survived the catastrophic Johnstown flood of 1889, mainly because the institute building held fast against the onslaught of the torrent. During 1895 to 98, he organized and conducted short courses in subjects such as business English, mathematics, bookkeeping, and penmanship in 26 towns in western Pennsylvania. In 1898, he settled permanently in the Braddock area, where he founded the Greer Business College, which he directed until he closed it and retired in 1940. After retirement, he still worked as a part-time private tutor and as a professional calligrapher, engrossing diplomas, testimonials, and resolutions. Mm. He was a member of the charter member of the Braddock Rotary Club and the vice president of the North Braddock Board of Education, 1925 to 1935. He was clerk of the session of the Braddock United Presbyterian Church and a member of the Board of Missions and the delegate to the Congress of Missions in 1930. He died on July 6, 1947.
How old was he when he died?
He was 87.
And how was his business school successful?
It was successful up until the time he closed it. He got too old to run it anymore.
Yeah. The depression didn't affect it at all.
Oh, well, the depression took it down. Yeah, but he kept it going through the depression and didn't close it until 1940.
Pretty good. What did you spend? You presumably spent all your childhood in Braddock and to school with there.
Well, we moved, the family moved I might say that my mother was a the mother's name before marriage was Jean Cooper Harris, and she was the she was a granddaughter of James Cooper, for whom Coopersdale, a Johnstown suburb, was named. Mm. Let's see. Oh, our family moved from Braddock to North Braddock. In 1912, after which I attended North Braddock High School and graduated in 1921.
What kind of secondary education did you have? Was it a good education, you think?
Well, the high school education was quite good. I had 4 years of, especially with respect to having had 4 years of chemistry, 4 years of science, and 4 years of mathematics. Mm-hmm. And at that time I developed an interest in physical science subjects. And hence emphasized those in my college work. I was influenced by my one of my high school teachers to enroll at Grove City College. Mm-hmm. In 1921, and after a year there, I thought that I would prefer to go to an engineering school, so I transferred to Carnegie Tech for my sophomore year. But by the end of the sophomore year, I decided I would rather concentrate in chemistry, so I returned to Grove City College and graduated there in 1925. At that time, I was offered a fellowship for further study in chemical engineering at the Case, what was then Case School of Applied Science. So I continued my education there with an additional 2 years, which fulfilled the requirements for a chemical engineering degree.
But you had a, you also had a BS in chemistry.
I had a BS in chemistry from Grove City.
And why did you decide to do a BS in chemical engineering rather than doing a higher degree, for example?
Well, because I wanted to get more basic engineering training than I would have obtained just going on for an advanced degree in chemistry.
Right. But you didn't feel equipped to go on and do an advanced degree in chemical engineering straight away.
No, well, I didn't have the necessary undergraduate chemical engineering subject, you see.
What was Grove City like at a college? I mean,
well, it's a nice small college. It has grown steadily since I went there, and it has presents a more complete picture campus-wise. That are new buildings that were provided with the help of Sun Oil Company, and they've also expanded their courses to the point that they now give a well-qualified chemical engineering degree.
When you went to Grove City College, presumably the chemistry department was quite small then.
Yes, they had, at that time they had just two chemistry teachers. One was a very well qualified man, the head of it, Dr. O.J. Seepline, who had had bachelor's degree training at Case, and had PhD training in Germany.
In Germany? What university? Can you remember?
I think it was, what was that? I've forgotten what it was now. It was something like Otterbein, but that's the name of a small college in Ohio. But I don't remember the name of the university.
Anyway, you were saying that he was the best qualified member of the faculty. Presumably.
Oh, how many members? Oh, we had only two chemistry members in the faculty at Grove City at that time.
And who was the other?
The other one was a Craig Hoyt, who had a master's degree from Cornell and was very competent. He taught physical chemistry. Both taught general chemistry. Seepline taught organic chemistry.
Right. And what kind of reputation did Grove City College have in chemistry? Did it have a sort of, about the small college, did it have a good reputation for chemical training?
It had a good reputation because, as I can attest that, because when I went to Carnegie to present my credits, the a chemistry reviewer that said, you had chemistry under Seepline? And I said, yes. Well, then he said, there's no question about your general chemistry being acceptable.
Oh, good. Any impressions of Carnegie Test when you were there? What was your impression of it?
Of Grove City?
No. Well, Grove City, yes. I mean, what was your impression, overall impression, of your time at Grove City?
Oh, it was well spent. I thought it was. Then I went back to Grove City and finished there, and I thought that I got a very good undergraduate chemistry.
And what about Carnegie Tech? I mean, you know, having gone to Grove City.
Well, Carnegie Tech was. Carnegie Tech. There was more. There was a. But very much more competition there. It was considerably more disciplined, especially in the mathematics department. It was the department that they prided themselves on having so rigorous that they flunked out a great number of people. So I did all right with it, but I felt. Congratulated myself on finishing up there with a good record and no demerits. However, I thought that since I was going to go for chemistry and I liked the chemistry at Grove City, I'd just go back to Grove City for that, and that's the way it's.
One question I meant to ask earlier was that this teacher who influenced you to go to Grove City, mm-hmm. was he himself a graduate of Grove City?
Yeah, he was a graduate, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You presumably went to Case because your professor at Grove City had been at Case.
Yes, he gave me a good recommendation, and he was well known at Case, and that helped me get a fellowship there. In those days, fellowships and scholarships were very rare. I mean, you didn't hand them out like they are handed out today.
Right. And who was the leading light at Case?
The head of the chemistry department was A.W. Smith. And his understudy was W.R. Veazey. I've forgotten where they got their. Well, Veazey got his Ph.D. from. Johns Hopkins, and Smith, I've forgotten where he got his, but they were quite active in consulting work for Dow Chemical Company.
Oh. Case, of course, is in Cleveland, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it's in Cleveland. Now it's merged with Western Reserve. Mm-hmm. They are two schools adjacent, just separated by a fence, which used to be torn down occasionally and fought over, but now that they're merged, that's all by the board.
Chemical engineering was still a comparatively new subject in the early 1920s. What was the teaching of chemical engineering like at Case in those days?
Well, the teaching in Case, of course, that the book of the Bible of chemical engineering, Walker, Lewis, and McAdams, was published just about the time I was at Case. So much of the chemical engineering was concentrated on descriptive courses in scaling up processes. There wasn't such an intense concentration of mathematics in it as there now is.
Mm. You felt you got a good education at Case.
Oh, yes. The education, the instruction at Case was top-notch, and the classes were small, and the instructors knew all the students very thoroughly, and the assignments were very specific and very well followed.
Was there anyone in either staff or student who made a great impression on you while you were at Case?
Well, one of my roommates had graduated from Grove City in the class just ahead of me, and had preceded me at Case in the same sort of a situation.
So what was he doing?
That was Ray Bounty, and he, on graduation from Case, he went to work for Dow and went right up the ladder to director of research. Another one who was at Case in my class was Nicholas Samaras, who after finishing at Case had taken advanced work at Yale, and later was employed by Monsanto, and rose to director of research at Monsanto.
Any interesting stories about the faculty from that period?
Well, the only thing I can think of is that one of the well-liked professors in the mathematics department was named Thomas, and somebody had given him the nickname of Bunny Thomas, and I said, well, why? He said, well, he's a mathematics professor, and he multiplies very rapidly.
Very good, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what that's for recording, but he was a very well-liked professor.
Where did he graduate from, do you know? Where did he graduate from?
Where did he graduate? Who, is it Thomas?
Thomas, yeah.
Oh, I don't know where he graduated from.
In 1927, after graduating from Case with a B.S. in chemical engineering, you went to work for Union Carbide at Charleston,
West
Virginia.
Right.
Did you ever consider pursuing an academic career instead of going into industry?
One of my professors once told me, when was this? This was about in 1927, as time went on, it seemed as if in order to get anywhere in an academic situation, you had to have a PhD, and I couldn't very well see myself going back to go for that, and so it just no one's sure I wanted to prefer that anyway, so I stuck with industrial work.
How did you come to be employed by Union Carbide in particular?
Well, that was easy because there were interviewers coming around to the college talking to the graduates, and this the Union Carbide situation looked the most interesting, aside from the fact that it was at least as remunerative as any of the other offers, and Union Carbide at that time had just been starting to make ethylene glycol. Mm-hmm. And they were the first in the field to see the possibilities in making chemicals out of petroleum gases.
And
it looked like it was a it was going to be a growing manufacturing area of operations.
And that attracted you, did it? I mean, that was a kind of that made an impression on you as a student.
Also, the associated the graduates who had gone with affiliates of this chemicals company had satisfactory relations with the company. Hmm. Had a good reputation for the way the graduates got along with it.
Yeah. When you joined Union Carbide, did you have a background in organic chemical engineering? I mean,
other than my training in college, no.
No. Union Carbide, of course, in 1927, had only just moved to Charlton from Clendinnen, further into the state. Did you hear any good stories of the backwood days in Clendinnen?
I can't think of anything that, lots of them, but I can't think of any to quote humorous or the like.
I mean, were there any complaints about it? I mean, did people say, oh, you know, it was horrible working there?
No, I don't think I...
No. What was the Charlton Works of Union Carbide like when you went there? Were they still in a fairly rudimentary state?
Well, the technical people in South Charleston at Carbide were a relatively small group and sort of like one big family, and it was interesting in the sense it was a very actively developing situation.
What were your first impressions when you got there?
Well, the first impressions were it's a the plant is certainly well maintained. There was everything was kept up very nicely. There was no old rusty junk lying around, and there was a great deal of welded piping running all over for long distances, showing that they had they took full advantage of their knowledge in welded construction. They were using raw materials that were the gases under pressure and keeping them well contained, and everything seemed to be in a high state of improvement.
Mm. What about the town itself? Did the town, I mean, coming from Pennsylvania, and what?
Well,
did the town make any
improvement? South Charleston, of course, is just a sort of a factory town. The town of Charleston was a very presentable looking town. I like the looks of the river flowing through it. It's had a rather picturesque appeal to me.
Oh, good. Mm.
So who was your immediate boss when you first went there? Who was in charge of you?
My first boss was Chester Heath, H-E-A-T-H. He had he was a chemical engineer who had worked for the a gas company in Chicago.
Linda?
I've forgotten what the...
Was it the People's Gas?
People's Gas. I believe that's what it was. I believe it was People's Gas.
I think they funded the Union Carbide setup, didn't they?
Well, they drew a lot of... Carbide drew a lot of men from them. I don't know. But the carbide operation there was essentially the... originated by George Oliver Kerm, Jr., who was later became the chief chemist of carbide. And he was in the New York office by the time I was hired.
Oh, he wasn't working in Charleston himself?
No.
I see, fine.
He had done some work in the Mellon Institute at Pittsburgh, yeah. and got the idea for... making chemicals out of ethylene, and it grew from that.
How did you get on with Heath yourself? I mean, how did you get on with him? What would you like to work for?
Well, Heath was a very well qualified and very considerate. Boss, and I liked him very much.
I think we might stop there.